This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two stars, two problems in Winnipeg.
The clock is certainly ticking for the Winnipeg Jets.
Patrick Laine leads the Jets with 74 goals over the last 2 years. Second on the team, Kyle Connor with 65.
Connor pulls away from Schmidt. Scores!
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, the 29th of June. Happy Canada Day long weekend to all of those celebrating this fine country, this fine weekend. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve is how to do it via Twitter. If you more prefer the text message version, you can do so. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. As we all know, NHL free agency opens up on Monday. A little more than 48 hours away from now, it'll open at 11 a.m. Central Time on Monday. Complete coverage here on TSN Radio 1290. Of course, the Winnipeg Jets got their business off and running earlier this week by extending qualifying offers to those you expected: goaltender Eric Comrie, defenseman Neil Pionk and Nelson Noje, forwards Patrick Laine, Andrew Kopp, and Kyle Connor. They declined qualifying offers, making these pending RFAs now unrestricted free agents, to goaltender Ken Appleby, defenseman Joe Morrow, Nathan Beaulieu, and forward Marco Dano. Let's start with that and the Jets and the qualifying offers. Any surprises there from your perspective?
Miss Jimmy Olinny.
Pardon me, I did miss, the Moose defenseman who probably, unless you follow the Moose closely, probably not a lot of people know his name, but Dave, I know you do, it's because you follow, that's why you're the Moose insider, David. You follow the Moose closely. So let's start with the qualifying offers, those that the Jets sent qualifying offers to, probably nothing much to discuss there. Those that declined, I think, are maybe slightly more interesting, specifically Morrow, Beaulieu, and to some extent, Marco Dano.
Yeah, boys, no surprises there for me. I mean, we knew that Nathan Beaulieu, the Jets would rather get him at a lower AAV. Before we get into the UFAs and before we get into the Jets, RFAs, UFAs, and all of that, I really think that what Pierre LeBrun tweeted out yesterday really applies. Like, I realize we're going to preview free agency and it starts on Monday, but when Pierre LeBrun says...
You're talking about the length of time.
Yeah, when Pierre LeBrun says that free agency should start 3 or 4 days after the draft and it shouldn't fall on Canada Day, like, I think we should be listening to Pierre LeBrun, and I don't think he's the only one. And even in his tweet, he mentions that he's not the only one, right? Because, Canada Day is a day you spend with your family, at night there's fireworks and all that. And I realize that there are reasons why free agency happens on July 1st, but Dave and I were talking about this off air before the show, right? Like, how many different times do we have to hear that Matt Duchene is meeting with Montreal, or that Artemi Panarin is meeting with the New York Islanders, or Sergei Bobrovsky and Panarin are meeting with the Florida Panthers ownership and management, right? Like, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, we should be talking about that, the free agency period being open already, right? Like, 'cause the draft was over exactly a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So why are we waiting till July 1st? That's all I wanted to say. Now back to the Jets. When you're talking about those big RFAs, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, Neil Pionk, I mean, all of those players, we know that they're going to be signed. Now, it is really going to be interesting to see what happens. I mentioned Nathan Beaulieu, Joe Morrow, both guys that weren't qualified, but Morrow, of course, wasn't qualified last year, and then he signed the one-year deal. I'm going to be really interested to see if the Jets bring back a guy like Beaulieu, because Ben Sherratt right now, it's not a guarantee, guys, that the Jets are going to bring him back. In fact, I would say probably less than 50% chance that Ben Sherratt comes back. You hear that maybe a team is going to offer him $3.5 million a year, $4 million a year. Now, that might be a little bit too much money, for the Jets' comfort level. But when you're talking about that left side, sure, Dmitry Kulikov being bought out is always an option. But if you
dwindling by the day based on the comments you've heard from Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Sure, but if you're losing Ben Sherratt, you're losing Nathan Beaulieu, Joe Morrow, I mean, that's all of your depth.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously, if they don't sign one of those three guys, I mean, that's a foregone conclusion that Kulikov isn't going anywhere. And I think there's a 50-50 chance. I think you guys would probably agree. I mean, we could honestly see Kulikov being bought out. But that's the one that I think when you're talking about those qualifying offers, the one that's going to be the most interesting to see who the Jets bring back on that left side. I could see it being Sherratt. I could see it being Beaulieu. I don't know about Joe Morrow, but it's certainly only going to be one of those three guys. And then when you talk about, you know, some of the other, you know, unrestricted, pending unrestricted free agents, Tyler Myers, to me, Brandon Tanev, I just don't think the Jets are going to be able to keep them.
You know, as it relates to Nathan Beaulieu, I'm not surprised the Jets didn't qualify him because they would have cost him, you know, $2.5 million to maintain his rights. And, you know, Nathan Beaulieu was fine for the Jets coming over from Buffalo at the trade deadline, but nothing about his game said that, you know, he was worth, you know, $2.5 million a season.
Yeah, I think with that, Chevy is just hoping to get him for a little bit less, whether that's, you know, 1.5, whatever
yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, that's what they did with Joe Morrow last year.
Yeah.
You know, with Morrow, though, at $1 million, I mean, you would have had to qualify him a little bit more than that. So, you know, $1.1 million, whatever it would have been. I would have thought the Jets, given the depth issues on the left side that you just spoke about, Ezzy, I would have thought, Dave, that the Jets would have maybe kept Morrow around at that point. And if he's in your press box, I mean, he's in your press box a little more than you like. But to your point, Ezzy, the left side after Kulikov and Morrissey right now is pretty barren.
No, I agree with you, Drew. And I think what we saw last year was when the Jets didn't qualify Morrow, they signed him 2 days later.
That's right.
And this year, of course, they obviously haven't. It's been 4 days since qualifying offers were due. So it doesn't appear that it's going to be that sort of similar instance. At least maybe the Jets are evaluating some other things. But, I mean, Inez is right. We were talking before the show, and you look at the depth the Jets have on D, and Mike McIntyre wrote an article about this in the Free Press today about, you know, right now, you know, the idea being Nelson Noje and Logan Stanley are your 7 and 8 guys. And again, you know, Logan Stanley seems to be a bit of a polarizing figure, but in my mind, he's a guy who needs to be developing in the AHL. He doesn't need to be a guy who's thinking about the NHL this season. I mean, maybe he gets one game similar to what we've seen with a lot of the young prospects at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, like, you don't want Logan Stanley playing in the NHL this year. You want Logan Stanley playing in the AHL. I think that's best for his development, similar to, you know, like what we see with a lot of young defensemen. And Nelson Noje is a guy who could, you know, if he needs to, get called up. But I mean, again, you need that depth. So to me, it's a little surprising. But obviously, it just shows you how tight they are with money that they want to be able to get him for whatever they're
looking to get him for, you know, $750,000.
Right.
You know, they're looking
an extra $400,000. And you know, yeah, to be honest with you, on this team with the cap issues, that could be something that's very important down the line.
Right. And wouldn't Chevy like to have that extra million and a half? Right. Because if you look at that, what is it, $23 million that the Jets have right now? Right.
$23.8 million.
Yeah. Okay. So let's call it $24 million.
Sure.
Okay. So when you have Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, and Neil Pionk as your big RFAs to sign, It's possible that $20 million is gone right there.
Oh yeah. I mean, no question.
So Andrew Kopp
probably more than $20 million, right? To be honest.
Yeah. Like I would put Kopp somewhere 2.5 to 3, mm-hmm. right? And then with Connor and Laine, regardless if they're signing, you know, bridge contracts or they're signing, you know, 5-year deals, uh-huh. you got to think 15 or 16 right there.
Yeah.
No right? question. And then you've got Neil Pionk, $3 million a year, something like that, $2 million a year. So then, you know, how much money is there left to sign a left shot defenseman, right? Like, I don't know if there's enough to sign Ben Sherratt.
And that, by the way, for the record, is why you need those, you know, margins, like a $400,000 shaving on a guy like Joe Morrow. You're saying, okay, well, why wouldn't they just go for 1.1? And I'm saying, if you can get him for 750, basically saying, look, you're going to sit in our press box and earn 750 grand and maybe get in a game or two.
Well, right now, though, he might not be. He's going to do more than be in the press box.
Fair point.
Who's your third pairing left side defenseman right now? I mean, you have Kulikov and Morrissey signed on the left side. Who else is playing that role right now? And so, you know,
I think Sammy Niku is always an option. We know that we've talked about this before on the show. I think we even talked about it as recently as a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
When you're talking about Niku, he plays on the right side, but he also plays on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not a question. Morrissey's your top pair defenseman. Right. And I would argue Buff is also going to play with Morrissey on the top pair as it stands now. I realize that Neil Pionk could be an option there, but for me, Pionk is, you know, at best a second pairing guy, probably a third pairing guy. So when you're talking about that right side, I mean, Pionk and Poolman are options there on your second and third pair. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to think that a Sammy Niku Tucker Pullman or a Sammy Niku Buff or Neil Pionk pairing is an option.
So you think that the Jets going into next year, even though that Niku, I mean, he's a left shot defenseman but who prefers to play the right side.
Yep.
You think that the Jets have him penciled in to play the left side?
No, well, he's their second best left shot defenseman right now.
Yeah, I would agree for sure. And I think the truth is, I mean, I know obviously that Sammy prefers to play on the right side, but he did, I believe, I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I'm fairly certain that when he came into the AHL, he played his first at least dozen games on the left side before he switched to his right. So he's got that versatility, and we know a lot of like the Finnish defensemen have that ability to play right or left side, even regardless of where they which way they shoot. But look, I mean, it's preference versus need. You know, I mean, if you may have a preference for something, but if your team has a need and you're able to fill that need, then you may need to do that.
Well, it'll result in a trade demand because we saw that with Trouba. You know, asking him to play the other side and he wants a trade demand.
Niku wouldn't be like.
Yeah, I know. I'm being quite tongue in cheek and facetious with my comment there.
And guys, I think the big X factor here is we mentioned it earlier, but is Chevy really considering buying out Kulikov? Right, because you save. You know, you have to pay him 2/3 of his salary, but some of it will count against the salary cap. Or are you going to either move out a guy like Matty Perreault or, and I'm not the one that has floated this out, Nikolai Ehlers is on the trade bait board, right? So, I mean,
I still don't believe it.
I'm not advocating. I said this last week or 2 weeks ago. I don't think the Jets should trade Ehlers because I think if you're trading him right now, you're trading him
low.
But before his prime years, I mean, we haven't seen the best of Ehlers. I don't think
it still does. I still don't see them getting to the. Yeah, to that desperation point where Nikolai Ehlers is the guy who has to leave Winnipeg. Because I don't understand. I never understood that. We've talked about it on the show really for the last month.
Right.
That it never made any sense to anybody in Winnipeg, I think. So I know that you need to fill 20 guys or 30 guys on the trade bait board, and I think that's more of than anything else.
Right. And that's why Matty Perreault, even though, you know, a guy that I think has been an excellent Jet, he's been a very versatile player.
Yeah, but you trade a guy who's 31, 32 with 2 years left on his deal, then a guy who's 23 years old with 6 years left on his deal.
And when you have that extra $4 million, well, you can use that to sign Ben Sherrod, right? And again, I think a lot of people think Ben Sherrod is out the door, but we know that the Jets like him. We know that he's had that good relationship on ice and off the ice with Buff. So if you're able to move out Perreault, well, then you can sign Sherrod. You can also sign Beaulieu, and you can sign all of your other major RFAs.
The clock is ticking. Yeah. It's June 29th, guys. Yes. I mean, if there are salary dumps to happen in order to, you know, re-sign your own free agents, they have to happen this morning or tomorrow. And by the way, if they happened this morning, that would be perfect.
Yeah, I was like, are you going to complain if something?
No, I'm not. It was just like, it was last year, remember, on the Saturday morning where they traded Joel Armia and Steve Mason to the Montreal Canadiens. So if you want to run that back again, Kevin Sheveldayoff, if you're listening, we would be certainly pleased if that was to occur.
No, but you're right, though, because and the reason why, and I know this is your reasoning, because you can't wait. I mean, Ben Sherratt will be signed. So I mean, there will be interest in a guy like Sherratt.
Once July 1st hits, everything is inflationary.
Like we talked about the Ottawa Senators, for example, because he's an Ottawa guy, right?
Yep.
Or he's close to Ottawa.
Yeah, he's Ontario.
So, I mean, there will be more than a few teams. I don't think there are going to be 10 teams after Sherratt. But I wouldn't be surprised if there are 4 or 5 guys. I mean, I've always been, I think, the biggest Sherratt fan of the group. But he's a guy that I think is underrated. Like, I don't think he's a top 20 defenseman in the league or anything like that. But I think he's very serviceable. You know, he's got a great shot, physical. You know, he can chip in a little offense once in a while, right? So I think if a Perreault trade is going to happen, and we don't know if it is, it has to happen in the next 48 hours.
Because if they wait till, I mean, the only chance you're going to get Ben Sherratt on a discount or on a contract similar to what he made last season is if for some reason July 1st hits and there's no interest in him. And I don't believe that to be the case because to your point, Ezzy, this is a guy who played, you know, double digit minutes for the Jets. He played, you know, you put him up with a, you know, if you have a more of a freelance defenseman like Bufflin, you know, who's a little more offensively inclined, you know that Sherratt is happy to play, you know, a more defensive role. And to your point about his physicality and everything else, you know, the quote unquote heart and soul kind of guy, you know, for whatever the numbers, the advanced analytics might say about that kind of guy, they do end up getting paid, especially on July 1st, for better or worse. So if the Jets think that, you know, there's not going to be a market for Ben Sherratt, and I don't believe the Jets think that, for the record. Mm-hmm. you know, they need to do something in really, you know, 48 hours. It's you know, 48 hours plus 46 minutes until free agency opens. So the things need to happen and happen quickly if they want to get him under contract, if they need to send some salary out to do so. I mean, Joe Morrow, Nathan Beaulieu, I'm not sure what the market's going to be for those guys, so they might be able to revisit on that front. But, you know, the clock is really ticking for the Jets. Some of their qualifying, the guys who are now UFAs, and then the RFAs will be dealt with, I think, accordingly after July 1st, when the landscape sort of shakes itself out a little bit more. When we come back, we talk about Kyle Connor, the report that teams are reaching out to him as a restricted free agent. We talk about the Jets and the upcoming free agency, much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Winnipeg Jets were initially looking at this situation saying, Tyler Myers is probably going to be in the $6 million range. Could we possibly get him in the high fives? And it seems like the Winnipeg Jets are closer to that number, what the market will bear, than some of the earlier projections. The market, of course, is fluid, and so we'll see what happens. The Vancouver Canucks have been hot after Tyler Myers, and he is their number one priority, but still, the Winnipeg Jets would certainly like to find a way to keep him as he's found a nice fit there.
TSN Hockey senior reporter Frank Saravelli giving some analysis about pending unrestricted free agent for the Winnipeg Jets, Tyler Myers. He has been linked certainly to the Vancouver Canucks over the last number of weeks or so. And of course, he did take a meeting during this interview period with the Canucks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, the producer of this fine program. We're live Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290 in this segment of the program brought to you by our friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So there's Tyler Myers there, and I think you guys will agree with me. At this point in time, it seems like Myers is just going to be too expensive for the Jets going forward. I mean, I never really bought it that the Jets were going to be able to get him under contract. We talked about the numbers
I think he'd like to stay in the city.
Yeah, but he's not going to leave $3.5 million on the table each season.
There just isn't enough room, right? Yeah. And you could go over, I would say, a good 20 teams, maybe more than that, maybe like 22 or 23, like, how many teams, aside from the Colorado Avalanche, the Florida Panthers, a lot of those teams, Ottawa Senators, a lot of those teams that have a lot of cap space, mm-hmm. right? Like, you just can only fit in so many players. Like, you look at the San Jose Sharks. Well, why are people now, not just people, reporters, are reporting that Pavelski basically is not able to re-sign in San Jose? Well, because you gave Carlson $11 million a year, and you can't afford Pavelski.
Yeah, because Pavelski got almost 40 goals last season, and he's going to get a big contract.
Yeah, he's going to get 6 or 7, and you have to re-sign Timo Meier, mm-hmm. right? And I realize we're not talking about San Jose this segment. We'll get into them later, but you're talking about Timo Meier, a guy like Kevin LeBanc.
Well, who a lot of people think that he is going, if there's going to be an offer sheet this offseason, it's going to go to a guy like Kevin LeBlanc, because the Sharks...
LeBlanc?
It's LeBanc. Sorry, I stumbled over my words
there. You're actually drawing a LeBlanc.
Yeah, I'm drawing a LeBlanc, but he's going to go to LeBanc. How about that? With his offer sheet.
Yeah, that was terrible.
Thank you.
But that was just awful.
Yeah, I do what I can, I got to tell you. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets and their free agents. And, you know, you mentioned Kyle Connor and then Pierre LeBrun earlier this week reporting that teams have reached out to Kyle Connor, you know, on the first day of the RFA speaking period. Do you guys think, let's sort of start with a general question. Do you think that there's actually going to be an RFA signed this summer?
Like, or is it even an offer sheet?
Is there going to be an offer sheet, on Monday?
A significant RFA or like a marginal
one? Even a marginal one is newsworthy. It's been so long since a marginal RFA.
I would say no.
So you think that
think it's a smokescreen. I think the agents love to put it out there to media guys, and then media guys pick it up, put it in, and increase the conversation about their clients. And I think it's really just a smokescreen. I don't think it's going to actually happen, but I mean, I could be wrong, but yeah. I just don't see it happening.
And Dave, I'm not in the, there's never going to be an offer sheet camp, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think the likelihood of an offer sheet is low. I would probably maybe put it at 40-60 or 30-70 or something like that. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there is an offer sheet to either a big RFA or, like you said, kind of a tier two. Like, Kevin LeBanc, what did he have, 55 points this year? He had, 4 goals and 9 points in the playoffs. He had that, excellent game 7 versus the Vegas Golden Knights. Like, a guy like Kevin LeBanc, you know, he'll probably make, what, $4 million a year? $5 million a year? I'm not sure exactly.
If he signs an offer sheet, it might even be more than that. He had 56 points in 82 games. I mean, this is a guy who's got an upward trajectory.
He's based in his early 20s. I mean, he's a really good player, and he was a late-round draft pick. But when you're
Sixth round, yeah.
Yeah, when you're talking about LeBanc, I mean, I think San Jose will try and probably match it. But I think, to Dave's point, I think the reason why there are so many people in the hockey world that don't think there will be an offer sheet this summer is because the last time one wasn't matched was Dustin Penner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, shout out to, you know, Dustin Penner from Manitoba, right? And we all know
Winkler,
the circumstances around Dustin Penner. I mean, when you're talking about Ryan O'Reilly and Shea Weber, the last two offer sheets, mm-hmm. I mean, it has been well documented that Paul Holmgren probably lost his job in Philadelphia because of that. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, like, Philadelphia really wanted Shea Weber. You guys remember how much bonus money?
$24 million is what had to be paid out within a calendar year.
Yep.
By the Predators, because the offer sheet said, you know, the signing bonus is $12 million, and then 11 months from now, the Predators had to pay him out another $12 million, because remember, if you match an offer sheet, mm-hmm. you're restricted from trading that player for 1 year.
Right.
So that's the poison pill that the Flyers, at that point in time, tried against the Predators, because the Predators were not the juggernaut that we know of today. Yep. They were more of a struggling
team. And
they had
Ryan Suter back then.
They had Ryan Suter. They were struggling. They weren't the financial powerhouse that they're perceived to be today.
Yeah, they weren't the team that had gone to the Stanley Cup final, and mm-hmm. and they were
Smashville wasn't a thing necessarily.
Exactly,
there was a lot of poison pills in there.
So there might be an offer sheet. I mean, I think the likelihood, again, one of these top guys like Sebastian Aho or Mitch Marner or Patrick Laine,
Kyle Connor.
I don't see that happening, but again, I don't want to say never, because I do think it is one of those only tools that a team can use to pry an RFA out from a team, right? So I just think that I would probably agree with Dave. I probably don't see an offer sheet coming, but I wouldn't be surprised. I think there are some people that are saying, oh, absolutely not. There will be no offer sheets. There's no way anybody's going to offer sheet Marner or Laine or Connor or Aho or Rantanen or any one of these guys, Braden Point. But maybe you have the tier two guys. Like you mentioned, Kevin LeBanc is a very interesting guy that you bring up, because you talk about San Jose, they almost went to the Stanley Cup final last year,
mm-hmm.
and LeBanc was a big part of that. Mm-hmm. So LeBanc is a key piece, and another guy who basically has squeezed Pavelski out of town, right? Because you're probably going to give, and Timo Meier had a great year too, mm-hmm. right? And so Timo Meier is going to get paid. What's he going to get, $6 million?
Probably. It could very similar. It could get a contract similar to Ehlers, which, of course, the similarities between the two of them, of course, going back to junior.
So, I mean, let's get it out there right off the bat. Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, those guys are not going to be offer sheeted.
Even if the Jets are going to sign, they're going to match everything.
Yeah, you don't think Chevy's going to match a Laine or Connor offer sheet? I mean, come on. Same thing goes for Kyle Dubas and Shanny in Toronto. If someone offer sheets Mitch Marner, they'll match it.
Of course they'll match it. And then they'll trade Andreas Johnsson, or they'll trade Kasperi Kapanen.
I think they should trade Nylander.
Or they can trade Nylander, certainly. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right, Ezzy. The big name guys, if somebody signs them to an offer sheet, great. The team's going to match it, and then they're going to figure it out later.
Yeah, like Julian Breezeball, he's not going to match a Braden Point offer sheet.
Of course he's going to.
Braden Point is going to be a core member of that team, along with Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos. So it wouldn't make sense. Like, the way I look at an offer sheet, we talked about Shea Weber earlier. You're only going to offer sheet a guy because you know that a team is up against the cap, and you're going to possibly make it so all of the bonuses make it impossible for a team to match it.
Andrew Kopp is more likely to be offer sheeted in my mind than Connor or Laine, because
he's not costing you four firsts.
Not going to cost you four firsts. You know, if you sign him to, you know, more than what the Jets would be quote unquote comfortable in paying a guy like Kopp, who's certainly a valued member of the team, but he's not indispensable. He's not, you know, he's not in your top six typically. He's not your, you know, the true superstar on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Jets would consider it, but I doubt very much that they would, not signing it. But if he got a ridiculous offer, maybe they'd say, okay, we'll take the picks in that exchange. But Connor or Laine or Marner or Aho or Point, those guys are all getting, you know, if somebody signs them to an offer sheet, they're all matching, and the other team's saying, no, thank you very much for doing my contractual negotiations for me.
And the only thing I was going to say is, and I like Dubas's comment about, well, if you're gonna sign an offer sheet, be prepared to go to that team. Meaning, if you know you sign with
Call your bluff.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, if you're gonna sign with a team that has a tremendous amount of room, that team is probably not going to be a team that's considered a Stanley Cup champion or a contender, I should say. So if you're willing to take that risk and go to, you know, insert team name here, you can, but there's a risk associated with that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And even though, you know, we all agree that, you know, the likelihood of an offer sheet is low, and if there is an offer sheet, there's probably only going to be one. But I will say this much. We've talked about Colorado and we've talked about Ottawa. The one team to me that is kind of a sleeping giant is Columbus.
Yeah.
You look at Columbus, they've got $28 million in mm-hmm. cap space, and you hear that Matt Duchene, there's still a possibility Duchene stays.
Seems like he's gone.
I think he's going to Nashville.
Yeah.
But when you talk about Columbus, you wonder, Columbus, Colorado, you hear Dave, Colorado's after a guy like Joe Pavelski, or they might be after a guy like Jake Gardner. Mm-hmm. You wonder if a team that misses out on one of those big fish, if those teams are the ones that are going to maybe try the offer sheet. Because really, what else? If you miss out on all these UFAs, I mean, that's kind of like your last resort, right?
Also, I think you have to look at a general manager who's not afraid of putting his neck on the line. So that's certainly Jarmo Kekäläinen.
That's right.
That's Lou Lamoriello in New York for the Islanders. They're willing to sort of do whatever it takes. They don't necessarily, you know, they're not beholden to the old boys club in the NHL. So,
right. You lose Anders Lee, right? Because Anders Lee is probably going to get seven and a half, right?
Yeah.
So maybe if you lose out on Anders Lee, you say, well, hold on, let's maybe offer sheet Timo Meier or Kevin LeBanc or somebody like that, right?
I mean, yeah. Or if Lamoriello wants to be, you know, really stick it to the Leafs.
Marner.
Now, I think the Leafs would match anything. It doesn't matter. But maybe that's an impetus to then make a trade to get a guy like Nylander or get a guy like Kapanen or whatever it might be. So it's unlikely, but some teams might entertain the idea if they want to stir some things up.
I hope we see an offer sheet. Like, I mean, for guys like us in the media, it's great. I mean, we haven't had anybody to talk about since Ryan O'Reilly, right?
Well,
so, I mean, it would be awesome if there was an offer sheet, but history shows that you rarely see them.
And something needs to shake up the NHL because, you know, the hot stove of the NHL is pretty boring. It ain't so hot compared to, you know, what you're going to see with basketball starting tomorrow night. That's when the NBA free agency opens, I think, 5 o'clock Central Time tomorrow.
East Day.
Pardon me?
East Day.
Oh, East Day. You're Kawhi. But, I mean, so I think to see the NHL maybe get a little bit more like the NBA in terms of the excitement and a little bit of the player movement and, you know, general managers doing whatever it takes to improve their team, that wouldn't be such a bad thing after all. When we come back, Paul Edmonds joins us for more free agency talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's a great way to reach us here in studio. You can also do so via text message like this texter did. He says, offer sheets have become a media myth. If a rogue GM offer sheeted a team, they would suffer repercussions from a lot of teams. There is honor amongst thieves. You can send your text messages to 1290 90. Standard messaging rates do apply.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
NHL free agency opens in 48 hours plus 25 minutes. Coverage of Monday's NHL free agency will be here on TSN Radio 1290, and our next guest will be a key member of that coverage. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Jets, joins us on the show. Paulie, good morning. How are you?
I'm real good, guys, and I would have to concur with you, Drew, on that first statement about offer sheets. I was thinking about that just the other day because there was a lot of hoopla that was made about how teams were interested in offer sheets for Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine and Mitch Marner, and the list goes on, and a lot was made of it, and it just hasn't materialized. You would think that if there was going to be an offer sheet to any of those players, or maybe I'm missing a few, that we would have heard about it now. And I just think that the price is just too steep. The more money you offer, the more first-round picks you have to give up. So there is a myth to that, and there's also a myth to every time we get into the draft, ooh, is somebody going to move their first overall pick? And that never happens either. So I think it's just certainly fodder for formats like ours to certainly talk about it, but it never really materializes, or it hasn't at least on both fronts and both accounts for a number of years. But it will get stirred up at least what's going to happen when it comes to transition of players on Monday for sure, when you have July 1st and the free agent frenzy signing day.
Well, you speak about the transition of players, and the Jets, of course, have a number of pending unrestricted free agents. We all know the names, Ben Sherratt, Tyler Myers, et cetera, et cetera. As we sit here, you know, 48 hours away from the opening of free agency, do you think that those guys are going to hit the open market, at least see what is out there, or could you see any of them maybe re-signing in the next couple days with the Jets?
Well, I think that Jet fans would hold out hope that they would get a couple of those guys signed, if not all three of them, based on the fact that you probably have alleviated a little bit of salary cap pressure with moving Jacob Trouba along. But it's really all about the dollars and cents. I think that all three guys that we can talk about, Brandon Tanev included in that mix with those two defensemen, that they would like to come back to Winnipeg. But if Winnipeg just can't offer the dollars that you're getting somewhere else, then you're going to move. There's a lot of talk about Tyler Myers in Vancouver. That would make a lot of sense. They've got some salary cap latitude, certainly, to give him the money that he wants and maybe deserves. Plus, he lives in BC, so it's easy for him or his family to get to and from Kelowna to Vancouver, and it makes a lot more sense. Ben Sherratt, you know, who knows what he is maybe trying to command on the open market. And to me, that would be the guy that you would really not want to lose in the blue line just because he's a different type of defenseman. He's physical. He's a defensive defenseman. He makes a pretty good first pass. You know, he's got a pretty good shot, as we've seen. Brandon Tanev, too. I mean, this guy's had 14 goals. He blocks shots, kills penalties. Somebody's going to give him some pretty good quids. So I think my feeling is this, guys, that we're going to be talking about more of what the Winnipeg Jets are not doing or didn't do come up July 1st, unless they surprise us, and more about the former Winnipeg Jets as of July 1st and where they signed, plus a number of other players and where they're going, because I think there's going to be some pretty significant movement, and I think there's going to be some pretty significant dollars handed out here as well. I just don't know that the Winnipeg Jets will be involved in that.
You know, Paulie, here on the station, we talk a lot about the Jets' top forwards, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, the big RFAs. But when you're talking about Andrew Kopp, Neil Pionk, I mean, these are going to be key players for the Jets. Do you get the sense that Chevy is going to sign Andrew Kopp and Neil Pionk first, and then we're going to have to wait a little bit before Chevy gets Laine and Connor done?
Well, there's that theory, certainly, Ezra. I mean, you can certainly go that way and then see what you've got left for the big guys, or you could go to the big guys, if you will, in Connor and Laine, and then see what you have left for those other two guys. I think Neil Pionk is a priority. I mean, this is a guy that you got in the Jacob Trouba deal, so you want to get him signed and see what he's capable of. And the bigger priority for me would be, in that same vein, would be Andrew Kopp. I have a feeling that Andrew Kopp could find his way into the top six this year, not as a centerman, but as a winger. And I just like the way that he came on last year and the things that he does and the leadership qualities that he has. And, you know, obviously he had some pretty good years at the University of Michigan scoring-wise that haven't quite translated over into the NHL. But at 24 years old, I got a funny feeling that he's just starting to find his way that way. We've heard a lot of stories or read a lot of stories and even seen it before our own eyes where guys come into the league and they become and morph into more of a defensive player so that they can earn that ice time, and then they add layers of offense to their game. And I think that's where we're kind of at with Andrew Kopp. So that would be a guy that I think that the Winnipeg Jets do not want to let go and do not want to get into any protracted negotiations. No, he's not going to command $5 million or even maybe $3 million, but somewhere in the neighborhood of $2-$2.5 million, I think, would be satisfactory for Andrew Kopp, and maybe bets on himself for only a couple of years before he maybe gets to free agency and he can maybe add that offensive layer to his game and then be a little bit more marketable. But I think Andrew Kopp is a bit of a priority when it comes to those role players on your team, and I think that his role will be expanded this coming season. I think he could move himself into an expanded role offensively, maybe with one of the top lines. Certainly, I think he could move from maybe the third line to the second line and help out somebody on the left-hand side for sure. And then you also have the option with Andrew Kopp of moving him back into the middle if you have to. He centered a pretty good fourth line last year that didn't play a lot in their own zone and seemed to have a lot of offensive chances. And we know what he's done with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev the last several years as well when they've had that group together.
You know, Paul, last Saturday at the conclusion of the draft, Jets director of amateur scouting, Mark Hillier, was asked about, you know, players and where the Jets are drafting from. And he goes, I don't care where they come from. I'm just trying to find NHL players. That's the bottom line. But he clearly recognizes the state of things because he did drop a Winnipeg reference in that same scrum. So even though he says it's not by design, right now we know next year there's going to be four Finns in the organization, potentially as many as 5 to 7 in the next few years. Obviously, a lot of times at these drafts, you know, they talk about best player available. But do you think that there is something to this, the idea of bringing Finnish guys in so the guys are, you know, line A and Vesalainen and are a little more comfortable with some of their countrymen who are also already in the organization?
You know what, Dave? I don't think that that is priority first three on the list of what you're looking for in a player. But I don't think that that hurts. I don't think that you go out with the mindset, oh, we're going to bring a Finnish guy in here because he's maybe going to pair up with another Finnish guy and make it feel like at home. But somewhere down the list, I think that that certainly gets discussed and that you make it comfortable for those guys and sort of have a bit of a home environment. I think, number one, Finnish hockey is producing some outstanding hockey players, so that's why they're dipping into that pool of resources from that country. Offensively, I mean, skating ability, all of that. I mean, these players are ready to go by the time they get to their teens and late teens and into their 20s. And the volume of star power that they're having and the offensive abilities that they have. The other part of it is, and Paul Maurice has talked about this, the Finnish players come out of Finland well prepared to play defensive hockey and in their own zone for the most part already. Joel Armia was like that, and certainly we're going to maybe see a couple other guys, Christian Vesalainen, stepping in this year. You know, I know that sometimes he's been criticized for what he's done in his own zone, and that being Patrick Laine, but that's not necessarily the positioning thing, or at least getting to where you need to go. Patrick's problem has been always kind of making that first pass off his back end out of his own zone. But in terms of positioning and where they need to be in the defensive side of their game, Finnish hockey's produced some players that are ready to go at the NHL level by the time they step in, and then they have that offensive ability to go along with it. So I just think that it's not necessarily a flavor of the month that we're seeing here with Finnish hockey. I just think that Mark Hillier, as he mentioned, and you paraphrased, Dave, has said that this is a country that's producing good hockey players. We're going to take the best player. And the fact that Winnipeg's had great success with Finnish players over the years, over the decades, over the two franchises that have called themselves the Winnipeg Jets within the National Hockey League, bodes well, I think, for now and the future. But at the same time, I think when you're looking and you're going to select somebody, it's based on talent, purely how they're going to fit in the organization, number one, regardless of what country they're coming from.
Paul Edmonds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Paul will be anchoring our morning coverage of Free Agency Day on Monday. You can tune in at 11 a.m. Central Time for all the latest NHL free agency action as the window opens. Paul, you know, you look at the Jets' defense and you particularly look at the left side, and that's the thinner of the two sides on the back end. You know, with that in mind, were you surprised that the Jets didn't at least extend a qualifying offer to Joe Morrow? Keeping him around wouldn't have cost much more than $1 million. Were you surprised that they let him go to unrestricted free agency?
Well, you know, yes and no. But also Nathan Beaulieu as well. They didn't qualify him, right?
Mm-hmm. He would have been a lot more expensive, of course.
Yeah, but Joe Morrow had a good year when he came over from Montreal in that half a season and then into the playoffs. But last year, I thought he struggled. He struggled trying to get into the lineup, struggled staying in the lineup. And I thought when he was in the lineup, it was just too many bad passes and too many bad decisions that were made with the puck around his own blue line. And I think that they were just kind of ready to move on from that. And, you know, Joe, while he had a good shot to skate, he just wasn't physical enough. And by that, I'm not saying you've got to run somebody through the boards, but you have to have a little bit of that mean streak down below your goal line and be able to pin people against the boards, move them away from the front of your net. And he just didn't have that in his game. And I think the Winnipeg Jets feel that they need to get back to that. You know, Paul Maurice talked a little bit about at the end of the season about how they need to get better defensively again. They need to go back to the way they were a couple of years ago as they improve there. And that starts with goaltending. It starts with your defensive structure. It starts with your forwards helping your D, all of it, right? But I also think that it starts with maybe a bigger body, too, that can help make sure that guys aren't getting to the front of the net in the greasy areas as easily as maybe some of the opposition did. So not surprised that they didn't extend an offer to Joe Morrow and they've let him walk. I think they feel that there's maybe some people down on the farm that can step up and play the minutes that he did and become that seventh or eighth defenseman. So not surprised there, and I guess we'll see what happens with anything in terms of maybe signing a Nathan Beaulieu, although, as you mentioned, he was quite expensive coming over. But I think there's enough, you know, on the farm, I think, to kind of push in. You know, here's a spot for Logan Stanley. Like, this is, when he was drafted, he was 2 years away from being 2 years away, right? Well, here we are. You know, I mean, we're at that point where we're stepping up, and he had a great year last year. Pascal Vincent told an excellent story about Logan Stanley last year when they were all banged up and how he had to step up and play 20-plus minutes, and he just kind of took off from there, and apparently his progression's been very good in the American Hockey League, and he was the, quite important defensive piece to their team with the Manitoba Moose last year. Dave, you can attest to that. So moving Joe Morrow out gives an opportunity for somebody to move up in your system, and you know, we might be talking a little bit more about a guy like Logan Stanley and how he might be impressing at training camp and through the exhibition season with that opportunity.
Paulie, we're obviously all about the puck on this show, but it's the end of June, so it's obviously golf season as well. So we got to ask you about a couple of days ago, you were emceeing the Gardewine Group Tournament out at Falcon Lake, and you know, you tweeted the picture out of the former NHL stars that you were playing with. They included Clark Gillies, Brian Trottier, Mike Bossy. I know myself growing up, my dad always said that Mike Bossy was the best pure goal scorer that he had ever watched, 560 goal season. So what was it like emceeing that tournament? And out of those three former Great Islanders, who shot the lowest score?
Well, they didn't play rounds necessarily.
Oh, okay.
What they did was they were all assigned, or they three were assigned to one specific hole. So when you came up to the hole, you played with that player. So for instance, you might have Mike Bossy, you might play the sixth hole with him, and then Brian Trottier, you were at 11, and then Clark Gillies, you were at, say, 15. So everybody got a chance to play in a rotation basis with those three players. It was absolutely outstanding. First off, in the shameless plug here, Falcon Lake Golf Course was immaculate. I mean, it was like carpet. There was no winter kill. It was excellent. They've got that brand-new clubhouse. I hadn't been out there for years. It's a fantastic golf course in Eastman, and I think if you have the opportunity to get out there and play it, I would highly recommend it if you're a golf fanatic or even a casual fan looking for a real nice round. And then certainly the players. Those guys are a throwback to what you kind of expected from your hockey player. They were engaged in the clients that Gardewine brought out. They told stories. They were personable. They were warm. They were approachable. They were excellent. I mean, Brian Trottier brought out his guitar after we had dinner, and he and Clark Gillies sang a couple of songs, a Johnny Cash tune, and they did The Gambler by Kenny Rogers, and Mike Bossy regaled us with stories. Clark Gillies told jokes. He was fantastic. I mean, these guys were just excellent. I think that the nouveau NHL player could certainly take a lesson from the way these guys handled themselves. And you're right. I mean, nobody takes a back seat to any of those, or these three guys take no back seats to anybody that's ever played in the National Hockey League. The Trio Grande line, I mean, four Stanley Cups, the amount of 50-plus goal seasons and 60-plus goal seasons that Bossy had, and the six Stanley Cups as a player, one more as an assistant coach for Trottier. You know, Clark Gillies was your quintessential power forward. He maybe changed the game a little bit in that era. It was just fantastic. Well, it was just a great day, and Gardewine did a real good job of getting these guys in, organizing this to a T. It was tickety-boo. It was boom, 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 and everything went really well. Just the interaction with these guys. They boarded the bus at Brazen Hall. We all drove out to Falcon. They were on the bus. They were mingling with people, played the round. We ate dinner, got on the bus, came home. It was just a fantastic day, and you know, I remember those teams. I wasn't a big Islander fan, but I remember those teams. And how can you not be a fan of those three players after you had that kind of interaction like I had a couple of days ago?
Paulie Edmonds is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN Radio 1290. Coming up Monday morning, he'll be kicking off our NHL free agency coverage, and then Rick Ralph will bring it home later on in the afternoon.
And Paulie, we will match any offer sheet. We're not really sure if we're going to match any offer sheet to Slick Rick, but we will match any offer sheet that's offered to you.
Well, I appreciate that. It's good to have options.
Yeah.
It's great to have options. Does that mean that if you send out an offer sheet, nobody matches, that I have to start working with you guys?
You can probably retire at that point in time. That would be my suggestion. Just retire and then, you know, kick your feet up on the dock and start fishing for a living.
Oh, I hurt my back. I think maybe before I retire, it would be a compo claim.
That's right. You're on LTIR at that point in time. Paulie Edmonds is the voice of the Jets. Paulie, thanks for doing this. We'll hear from you on Monday morning, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Talk to you later.
Talk to you soon. When we come back, we look at the Central Division. We start going division by division, team by team, previewing NHL free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, this isn't just a hockey decision. The hockey fit has to be there. I like the fit with the Nashville Predators, but I don't not like the fit with the Montreal Canadiens. But it goes beyond the impact that he can have on the ice and how he feels within the community. Don't forget, he's got a young family now, and that's a big part of his decision-making process. But he'll be highly coveted, and he's going to make big bucks, depending on what Artemi Panarin makes.
TSN Hockey insider Darren Dreger, the he in question there is Matt Duchene, the most sought-after, well, maybe behind Artemi Panarin, probably definitely behind Artemi Panarin.
As a quick aside, have you seen that everybody, I didn't understand this initially, but did you see that everybody, whenever Dreger tweets now, says Paul?
Yeah, because Paul Marner.
Yeah, no, I know, but I didn't. So I was like, he tweeted something about the Jets, and I was kind of like, okay. And then I was looking at every. They're like, but how does this affect the Leafs, Paul? And it was like every reply. I was like, what?
I noticed that too. And I had to Google
so
what does
like,
Paul and Darren Dreger mean?
Honestly,
because I saw those comments too, and someone created this nickname, and now it's stuck.
Well, it's Paul Marner, Mitch Marner's father. Yeah, so the allegation is that Paul Marner is feeding the information to Darren Dreger.
I mean,
Dreger is just doing his job.
No, but I mean,
I realize a lot of this is hype, but.
I mean, the problem is
it's kind of funny. I bet Dreger finds it funny too.
I don't know. I mean, it's almost close to cyberbullying because it's every tweet. What about this, Paul? What about this, Paul? And like hundreds of replies. I don't know. I just thought it was like, and I'm with Ezzy. I had no idea. I was like, what am I missing here?
Leafs Nation is apoplectic that Mitch Marner, Toronto-based guy, and we'll talk more about the Leafs when we get to do the Atlantic Division preview. But they're apoplectic that a great player in Mitch Marner, a superstar, would dare ask for superstar money, because I'm not quite sure what their logic is, but I mean, it's a very interesting dynamic.
Whatever, Paul Mindell.
Yeah. I'm going to say that it's a very interesting dynamic between Kyle Dubas and the representation of Mitch Marner.
Because, Darren Ferris. Yeah.
Yeah. You seem to think that there's a lot of churning going on underneath the scenes there, and it's coming out in the tweets and the responses. And, it's almost like Twitter's not a great place. I know that's breaking news here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But
yeah, let's just calm down. I think everybody expects Marner to sign. He'll get $10 to $11 million a year. I just think there's a lot of anxiety in Toronto with Kawhi Leonard and Mitch Marner. Like, I think a lot of people still are kind of holding on to that belief that Kawhi Leonard's going to re-sign, even though, there are a lot of people that think he's going to sign in LA, right? So I hope that he stays in Toronto, but I think that might be fueling that a little bit, because you've got Kawhi and Mitch Marner, but that's just me.
Illegal motion.
The illegal screen basketball show featuring Ezra Ginsberg, everybody. Quickly, let's talk about Matt Duchene, because we're going to have Marty Biron join us in the next couple minutes. Matt Duchene, do you think that he ends up in Nashville? It seems like it's between Nashville and Montreal and maybe Columbus, returning to Columbus as what I would describe as a very big dark horse. It seems like Nashville and David Poile have been doing everything in their power to get Matt Duchene for the last 5 years. And now that he's an unrestricted free agent, to me, it seems like, this is their opportunity to get him for whatever it's going to cost them, $8 million, $9 million a year.
Right, yeah, it's probably closer to $9 with the amount of money that a guy like Jeff Skinner got, right? So, yeah, I think there's a really good chance, Drew, that Duchene signs with Nashville. But if you look at Nashville, they've only gotten $13 million in cap space. They also have to re-sign, and I realize these aren't, top players for them, but you've got Colton Sissons, and you've got Rocco Grimaldi. And Colton Sissons, by the way, 15 goals, 30 points last year, making under $1 million a year, one of the best bargains in the league. So he'll probably make $2 million a year on his next contract. So 9 plus 2, and then, throw in another mill or something for Rocco Grimaldi. I mean, they're going to be right at the cap ceiling, right?
Yeah.
So I do, to answer your question, yes, I do think Duchesne is heading to Nashville. I think the chances of him staying in Columbus, even though, you know, there is a little bit of a chance, I do think that Nashville makes so much sense. You know, you slot him in as your second line center behind Ryan Johansson. Maybe he's even your first line center. It just makes too much sense.
Yeah, and then Kyle Turris is a very overpaid third line center, but unless they can get out of that contract, but they're probably not going to be able to get out of that one right now unless they throw in a high draft pick as well in a pure salary dump. So Nashville and Matt Duchesne, they've sort of been linked this entire time. Artemi Panarin, he's still a little bit up in the air. We'll get back to that throughout the course of the show as we go division by division, team by team. When we come back, Marty Biron is going to join us for more NHL free agency talk. We'll look at the goaltending world, much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and is serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend. You know him as TSN hockey analyst. You know him from his coverage of the Buffalo Sabres as well. Marty Biron joins us on the line now. Marty, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning to you guys as well. A fun weekend before free agency. That's always fun.
Absolutely. It is always fun, and we are 49 hours away from the start of free agency on Monday morning now. You know, Marty, from your perspective in Buffalo, I mean, we'll get to the acquisition that they made late yesterday of Colin Miller from the Vegas Golden Knights, but from your perspective in Buffalo, do you expect the Sabres to be an active team in free agency? You know, they've made some splashes already. They strike me as a team that sort of is in need of a Justin Williams type. I mean, I think you've heard Brian Boyle potentially being linked there. Sort of a veteran who can take a young team that is struggling to learn how to win in the NHL and maybe put them on the right path to more success. Because this has been a franchise that we know has been looking for success for much of the last decade.
Yeah, I don't expect them to be very active in free agency. I think the bigger need right now for the Buffalo Sabres is a top six forward. You've got Skinner signed. You've got Eichel, Reinhardt. You know, you can maybe put in or pencil in a Victor Olofsson, who had a really good season in the American League. He's got a great shot. He's a goal scorer. Maybe you can give him top 6 minutes, but you got to get somebody at the center position on that second line. I don't think Casey Mittelstadt is ready yet. So, and for me, that's going to come via a trade. I think what the Sabres did yesterday, give them even more defensive depth. Now you may look to move one of your regular defensemen and try to acquire some skill at forward to round out the top six.
You know, Marty, you just mentioned that Colin Miller acquisition, and I think you'd agree that was a really nice acquisition by Jason Botterill, just giving up a couple of draft picks to get a guy who is under contract at $3.8 million for the next 3 years. And you mentioned that Jason Botterill might have to trade one of those defensemen. Do you expect it to be one of those right-shot defensemen? Rasmus Ristolainen is the guy that you hear a lot, a guy that might be on the move, or do you maybe move someone else? Because Zach Bogosian is a guy who most likely isn't going to start the season healthy. So is Ristolainen maybe the guy to watch?
Well, I mean, if you just wanted to unload a contract and unload a player, I think you can unload Zach Bogosian. You may not get anything in return. You may actually have to give up something to unload that contract, but I don't think that's what the Sabres want to do. And Zach Bogosian has been pretty vocal in the locker room. He's been a leader. So I don't think the Sabres want to do that. I think what the Sabres want is make a hockey trade. Give up a, you know, good player that maybe doesn't fit in well with your group anymore as to what you want to do, and go get something that's going to make your team better. And I think that's why Ristolainen would be the most likely candidate. Now, when you make a trade, some people are like, well, he's going to end up somewhere else and he's going to be a stud. And I don't think you have to be afraid of that, because you have to be looking at your team. What your team needs to become a better successful team in the National Hockey League. Right now, the Sabres need a top six forward. There's nobody else on the roster that really you could trade for a top six forward other than Rasmus Ristolainen. So I think he's the one that's most likely to be going, especially since now they acquired Colin Miller, and now you've got Rasmus Dahlin a year older. You've got, you know, some good defensive depth in your system. So to me, that's really is the one player that could fetch a decent return for the Sabres to get better.
Marty, it's a big year for the Buffalo Sabres next year. It's their 50th season in the NHL, and for 49 of those 50 seasons, Rick Jeanneret has been either calling those games on the radio or television. What has he meant to this organization?
Well, I mean, whenever you listen or you watch a Buffalo Sabres game, you look for Rick Jeanneret's voice. I mean, Dan Dunleavy's done a fantastic job. It's like a tandem, a 1A, 1B. I don't think there's a starter and a backup because they're both fantastic. But RJ means so much to the community of Buffalo, to Sabres and their fans. And, you know, there's been some tough years of late, years where the Sabres have not won too many games or where games have not been fun. But when you listen to Rick Jeanneret and he goes high with his voice and he makes it sound like something really good is happening on the ice, although sometimes it's not, and his knowledge of the game. And let me tell you, the last two seasons, you know, working on the broadcast, my favorite part of the night is at about 4:30, 5 o'clock when I'm at the arena and we're in the media room having our supper, and I'm sitting with Rick Jeanneret and just learning from him, talking to him about the game and about the other teams. And to me, that is a luxury to be able to sit with Rick Jeanneret and all of his knowledge.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. NHL free agency starts 49 hours from now on Monday morning. And Marty, from my perspective, the goaltending carousel is one of the most interesting parts of the upcoming free agency. We know that Sergei Bobrovsky sits atop of that carousel, and all indications are that, you know, he's going to end up with the Florida Panthers. At least that's where the betting money would be right now. You know, of the free agent goaltenders, which one do you think may provide the most value for money?
Oh, I mean, value for money is tough. I think what you have to do with goalie is, for me, the free agent market for goaltender is probably the worst place to find a goalie. When I look past historically, you know, it hasn't worked. Ilya Bryzgalov didn't work. Ryan Miller went from Buffalo to St. Louis and then, you know, went to Vancouver. It didn't seem to have worked all that well. Jonathan Bernier, I think, came in, you know, from L.A. to Toronto. That didn't seem to have worked. You know, the Winnipeg Jets acquired Steve Mason. That didn't work. I mean, there's free agent market for goaltender is not a good one. Now, Robin Lehner may be interesting because he had such a fantastic season, but was it because of the system the New York Islanders were playing with? And how much money is he going to want? I mean, he was making only $1.5 million last year or whatever. He bet on himself. I bet you he's going to want to get to the $4 million plateau this summer. So that may be why. It may be too much for the Islanders. You know, Peter Mrazek, you go down the list, Mike Smith. I don't think there's really any value in acquiring a free agent goaltender, or at least paying a lot of money for that free agent goaltender. I think the only guy that's valuable on that board for me is Sergei Bobrovsky. Varlamov is not valuable to me. You know, you may get value in Curtis McElhinney because the numbers may be lower when you look at salary, but I don't like free agent goaltenders to come in and really play a big role with a team. Usually that doesn't work.
Marty, we have to ask you about the big news that came out earlier this week. That, of course, is Roberto Luongo officially announcing his retirement, and your career crossed paths with Luongo's career. You were both first-round picks. You, of course, were drafted by the Sabres. Roberto Luongo was drafted by the Islanders. He was, I think it was fourth overall back in 1997. Just some few thoughts on Roberto Luongo's career. I think you would probably agree that he's destined for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's destined for the Hall of Fame. And listen, I've known Roberto for many years, playing against him in juniors. He played with my brothers, with the Islanders and the Florida Panthers. You know, for me, I got a chance to play with Roberto at the 2003 World Championship. I got a chance to skate with him in the summer because we had the same agent. Roberto, it was not a ace, and I'm going to say this in a funny way. He wasn't a sexy goalie. He wasn't the type of goalie you watch in practice and you say, wow, what a stud. Look at how fast he is laterally. Look at how good he is technically. He wasn't that goalie. He had a feel for the game. He could read the play so much better than anybody else. Obviously, he had the size. But for me, like when you had him one-on-one, he was so good at reading and reacting to where the shots were going. So if you, you know, that's why he got all the highlight reel saves, because with the glove especially, because for him, it was almost a game. He would bait you to go high glove and then he'd take it away. And he was so good at reading and reacting. So I think his longevity, his ability to make a poor team look average, because he played on some bad Florida Panthers team and he made them look pretty good. So for me, he's destined for the Hall, and that was a really good career.
Marty, Ralph Krueger took over the head coaching position 6 weeks ago, so obviously there hasn't been a ton of time to see what he's been able to do, but obviously you've had the development camp in Buffalo this past week. Have you noticed him putting his stamp on this team in any way, shape, or form?
Well, not really, because he talked to the prospects at development camp. He introduced himself and had the, you know, some kind of a meeting with them. But most of the on-ice instruction was done by Chris Taylor, the Rochester Americans coach. They had a skill session that was run by the Academy of Hockey here in Buffalo. So there was a lot, you know, going on the ice, but not so much with Ralph Krueger. He was more behind the scene. He was watching, getting accustomed with the organization, with the coaching staff, and with some of the players. So I think, if you're Ralph Krueger and you were watching development camp, you watch guys like Tage Thompson. You watch guys like Victor Olofsson and Asplin. You know, some of the guys that are on the cusp of coming into the NHL. And this is what you're probably watching from your stance. I think when you get to training camp is really when we're going to see the stamp and what Ralph Krueger can do with the team.
Marty Biron is an analyst on MSG Buffalo Sabres broadcast. You also know him, of course, as a TSN hockey analyst. Marty, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Enjoy the holiday weekend and enjoy Monday.
Likewise, Marty. Take care. When we come back, we continue our look at the Central Division. We're going to start with the Chicago Blackhawks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Peter Mrazek in Edmonton, the link with Ken Holland, obviously, was his manager in Detroit. Now, can they get it done as far as a price point? Because he's going to be looking at Koskinen's contract and say, I need something like that or a little bit more. So if they can't get it done, to me, a 1A situation would be Semyon Varlamov. He made 5.9 last year in Colorado. You may get him on the cheap in Edmonton.
It's TSN hockey analyst Jamie McLennan looking at some of the goaltending scenarios that are at play come July 1st. Of course, that is 48 hours and 40 minutes from now is when the window of NHL free agency opens. You can hear coverage of Monday's free agency day live here on TSN Radio 1290. Paul Edmonds gets it started. Rick Ralph will finish it all up later on Monday afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're looking at the Central Division. The Chicago Blackhawks made a trade to sort of get things started earlier this week. They acquire from the Carolina Hurricanes defenseman Calvin DeHaan, along with forward Alexei Sorella, in exchange for goaltender Anton Forsberg and defenseman Gustav Forsling. They also make a couple of RFA signings yesterday, getting Dylan Sakura and John Quenneville under contract. The trade to me, as of course, that's the bigger of the moves. You know, I think Calvin DeHaan on the Blackhawks back end, you know, it's been an area of weakness for Chicago as of late. They don't give up a lot to get him. You know, Anton Forsberg sort of was expected to develop into something. He never has it with Chicago. They got him from Columbus, I believe, in the Artemi Panarin deal with Brandon Saad going back the other way. from my perspective, this is a very good move for the Chicago Blackhawks getting Calvin DeHaan.
Yeah, and also Olli Maatta.
Yes, right? We're getting him from Pittsburgh a couple weeks ago.
And Dominic Cahoon is actually a nice, small, speedy player, and I think he'll fit right into the system that they have there in Pittsburgh. Mike Sullivan, you know, we know that they have, you know, fast, skilled forwards there. But yeah, when you're talking about Calvin DeHaan and Olli Maatta, now they have kind of a logjam there, and then you wonder kind of like, what are you doing with guys like Connor Murphy and Slater Cuckoo, who's under, by the way, still one of the best names in the NHL. So, you know, a guy like Connor Murphy, but, you know, we know that the Hawks were going to be aggressive after defensemen, right? Mm-hmm. And Olli Maatta, I think, has been a bit of a polarizing guy, right? Because he came in with a bang very young with the Penguins, and then he struggled with injuries and all of that, and he was obviously expendable. But Calvin DeHaan, back to your original question, DeHaan is a guy that I've always liked, and I agree. I mean, you don't give up a lot. I mean, DeHaan is clearly the best player in that trade, and also DeHaan makes $4.5 million a year for the next 3 years. So we talked about it earlier. To have a salary certainty, I mean, that's a very manageable. You would, if Calvin DeHaan was making $7 million a year, you'd say, oh, he's overpaid.
Yeah.
But $4.5 million for a top four right shot defenseman is exactly what, left shot defenseman is exactly what he should be making. So really like that move. And overall, I really like what Chicago has done. We're going to talk with Jimmy Greenfield coming up. You know, Kirby Dach, they just got him. When you look at Dylan Strome, Alex DeBrincat, I mean, people forget the Hawks made a really nice run in the second half of the season. They were playing some good hockey. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't make up all of that ground, and they happened to be in one of the best divisions in the league, right?
They've done a nice job rebuilding their defense, which was really you still have Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, you know, Dylan Strome came in and was, you know, a revelation after coming over from Arizona. Alex DeBrincat, you know, is a fantastically talented player. So their top six forwards are pretty good. They got a little bit of issues, I think, in their depth, in the depth of their group up front.
Dylan Secure is a pretty good young player.
Yeah, they got young players. You know, John Quenneville, they get him from New Jersey. It doesn't cost them much. You know, and, you know, it's a bit of a gamble. I mean, it's, you know, no big deal if he works out or if he doesn't. I just like what they've done in sort of rebuilding their back end, because you knew that they were sort of, they were Duncan Keith. And, you know, Brent Seabrook is obviously making too much money for his performance as of late, but they've sort of done a fair bit to mitigate the damage on their back end.
Right. And your back end is better, and you also have some cap room to possibly bring in a forward, right? And you hear Joe Pavelski is a guy they obviously covet, but, you know, there are other teams like Dallas and Tampa Bay that I think are ahead of Chicago as far as teams that, you know, Minnesota, we could throw in there as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you talk about maybe a guy like Anders Lee. I mean, there are guys, I think.
They have $12 million left.
They have $12 million for this year. The problem is for next year when they have to re-sign DeBrincat and Strome, if they continue on their upward trajectory.
By the way, I don't think they're getting Pavelski or Anders Lee. But, I mean, the point is, you hear a couple of guys I'll just throw out there that Mark Lazarus of The Athletic threw out, Ryan Carpenter and Pierre Edwards. Belmar, kind of bottom six forwards, Drew.
Which is what they said they needed to rebuild is the bottom six of their forward group. So the Blackhawks had their dip, but I would suggest their trajectory is pointing upwards again, and it didn't take them very long. A team that's got continues to have an upward trajectory is the Colorado Avalanche. They made a couple of moves this week, a couple trades. They sent out centerman Carl Soderberg and acquired Kevin Connaughton and a 2020 third round pick that was from the Arizona Coyotes. They then flipped that third round pick along with a second round pick and pending unrestricted free agent Scott Kosmachuk, former Manitoba Moose player. Mm-hmm. They sent him to Washington. They sent those picks and him to Washington in exchange for Andrei Burakovsky. I like those moves. Again, the Avalanche needed to sort of shore up that secondary scoring. You bring in a guy like Burakovsky. We know that they have to re-sign Mikko Rantanen. I mean, their defense is going to be stellar for years to come after their drafting as of late. This Colorado Avalanche team, to me, is up at the upper echelon of the Central Division.
Right, and, you know, Joe Pavelski and Artemi Panarin are two guys that have also been linked to Colorado, Drew, because, as you mentioned, they have $38 million in cap space.
They got a meeting with Panarin's agent. They didn't get a meeting with Panarin himself.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to Colorado. I mean, Panarin is going to Florida or New York, guys. Yeah. I think we'd all agree with that, most likely Florida.
He wants to be on an ocean.
Well, and it could be a package deal. I mean, Bobrovsky and Panarin have been linked together for a long time, but the point is, like, I look at Colorado, and I look at kind of that second tier, like a guy like Matt Zuccarello or a guy like Gustav Nyquist, or maybe, you know, a guy like Michael Ferland, even though, you know, Ferland is maybe not as offensively skilled as a guy like Matt Zuccarello. But to me, there's a bunch of kind of tier two forwards, and that's what I expect Colorado to do. I don't think we should also mention Nikita Zadorov needs a new contract.
Right.
So he's a pending RFA. So, but, you know, he's going to be $4 or $5 million. Even with Zadorov's contract, Alex Kerfoot is another guy. I think JT Comfort, for, is he not an RFA, Dave?
I don't think he's an RFA.
Kerfoot, and there's another guy they have to, they have a few RFAs they need to sign, but the point is,
well, Burakovsky's now an RFA. Comfort is an RFA as
but
well.
But Burakovsky was qualified, though.
Yes, of course. I mean, they're not. I mean, they just acquired from.
He
was qualified by Washington.
I think he's around $3 million. Burakovsky to me is a sneaky good signing because Carl Soderberg. You remember what he did to the Jets last year when he was in town. I mean, Carl Soderberg's a good second-line center. And when you talk about Burakovsky, he didn't have a good year. But you look at Burakovsky and you say, okay, well, in Colorado, though, he's going to get a lot more opportunity as opposed to Washington, right, where he was kind of a bottom six forward there. He was buried a little bit but didn't have good numbers. So I'm interested to see what Burakovsky could do there. But I definitely think Colorado is going to be active. Like I said, I don't think they're going to get Pavelski or Panarin. But I think you look at some of those tier two guys, like a guy like Marcus Johansson, to me, makes a lot of sense in Colorado.
Well, I was going to say, and the big thing for Colorado is the fact that, you know, Marty Brown touched on it, Varlamov's most likely gone, but Philip Grubauer, in 18 games after the All-Star break, stopped 95% of the shots.
He was fantastic.
And he did that, I think it was 93% in the 15, you know, games in the playoffs or whatever he played.
He affirmed himself it took him a little bit of adjustment period, but he affirmed himself as the number one guy in Colorado.
And they've got a younger guy, Pavel Francouz, who played in the KHL as a Czech goalie. He's on a cheap deal. So from Colorado's perspective, if you have Grubauer who can seize that number one spot, And then you've got a relatively cheap backup. I mean, that's a pretty good thing for a team that's got a lot of cap space and is on the upward trajectory.
Colorado is going to be a juggernaut for a few years to come, certainly in the Central Division and in the Western Conference. The Dallas Stars, they made a couple of moves earlier this week as well. They acquired Ryan Hartman from the Philadelphia Flyers for forward Tyler Pitlick.
And Hartman still doesn't know.
Well, and they immediately chose not to give him a qualifying offer. So he's actually an unrestricted free agent.
You saw what happened, though, right?
Nobody told Hartman.
It wasn't
that nobody told him. He went off the grid. He went on, I think it was a camping trip, Dave.
Well, he went to the lake.
Okay. Yeah, he went to the lake and said, I'm going to be off the grid. And then everybody was tweeting at him. I think,
including his mom.
Yeah, was that his mom?
That was his mom,
I knew
apparently.
That it was somebody in his family kind of wrote, like, check your DMs or something. so he was traded, but then he wasn't qualified.
Yeah, so he's an unrestricted free agent. Yeah. The Stars are hoping
I think by now he knows.
Yeah, the Stars are hoping to get him back under contract, but they chose not to qualify him. I mean, he's actually
a former 20 goal guy.
He's a pretty significant fall from grace. Remember, the Predators gave up a first round pick for him at the trade deadline.
He was a first round pick.
Yeah, he had that 5-point night in Winnipeg, his first game with the Predators 2 seasons ago, after the trade deadline, and then things sort of fell off the table.
Didn't the Preds win that game like 6-5 or something?
Yes, they did. It was a hell of a hockey. It was probably one of the best hockey games the last couple of years. Anyways, Pavelski, you mentioned him a couple times. He's linked to Dallas. That's another team.
Pavelski makes so much sense there, right? Because they've got the cap space, right? And it looks like Matt Zuccarello is going to sign with another team.
Yeah.
So to me, like Tampa Bay or Dallas makes so much sense.
Tampa Bay, I don't think can get it done with the dollars it's going to cost.
Dallas has $10 million and they've got 19 guys signed right now.
Yeah, so Dallas has the money where they can afford to.
Tampa Bay really also has to sign a guy like Cirelli.
Yeah,
I mean, like Braden Point, Cirelli. Those guys are going to eat up most of their remaining cap space.
Yeah, you sign Pavelski. I mean, you got a guy like Martin Hansel coming off of the books next year. I mean, they could probably LTIR him if they needed to because his career is sort of he's got significant back issues. So the Joe Pavelski going to the Dallas Stars and thus even making the Central Division even tougher. Right.
Is there any doubt that the Central is back to being the best?
Not in my books. I mean,
it's between the Atlantic and the Central.
And I think the Central 1-8 is the most difficult of the divisions. I mean, the team that's in the worst position in the Central Division is the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, and they're still a pretty good team.
Well, they fell off towards the end of the year last year, of course. But
they didn't miss the playoffs by much.
Not by much.
Did they miss it by 5 points or something?
Something like that. But you sort of felt that they were never. I mean, they were very successful against the Jets last season, but you never really felt that the Minnesota Wild were. I'm going to say a real threat or a real, you know, they were close to the playoffs, but they sort of seemed like if they got in, they would be out very quickly. But the Predator, the Wild, to your point, they are interested in Joe Pavelski. Doesn't seem likely that he's going to go there. You mentioned Anders Lee. He's a Minnesota guy.
The Wild actually missed the playoffs by 10. So,
but they fell off at the end of the year. Yeah. I mean, they were better until sort of the last month of the season. The Minnesota Wild, I think, are the clear bottom feeder in the Central Division. They just seem to be a step behind everybody else in the Central Division. And, you know, they want to be players in free agency. We've heard that. You know, Michael Russo has said that they want to be players and that maybe Wayne Simmons is a guy they're interested in. I don't think that they're going to be big game hunting. They might be big game hunting, but I don't think they're going to be successful in doing so.
Well, yeah, and same thing goes for the Wild, though. The Wild have quite a bit of cap space, but they also have to sign Kevin Fiala. They have to sign Joel Eriksson Ek.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and those players aren't going to get, you know, like $6 or $7 million a year, but when you're talking about Fiala, he'll probably get, what, five?
Probably.
Something like that.
Maybe
Fiala's a really talented player. So I agree with you. Anders Lee, because he's from Minnesota, I mean, that's why he's linked, makes a lot of sense, but I just think Pavelski going to Minnesota is a long shot just because you got to think.
Pavelski wants to win a cup.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's not winning that cup in
Tampa
Minnesota.
Tampa Bay and Dallas have legitimate shots at winning the cup. But when you're talking about Minnesota, all due respect to the Wild,
yeah.
I mean, that's not a team that I think is one or two players away.
I would agree with that. The St. Louis Blues, they, of course, won the cup. I wouldn't expect them to be especially active in free agency. They did just re-sign pending unrestricted free agent defenseman Carl Gunnarsson. He gets 2 years and $1.75 million per season. Quality depth defenseman. Fits very well with what they do. They know
and
the guy.
Coach for 3 years.
What's that? And their coach, and they signed Craig Berube for 3 years. He gets to the extension after, of course, leading them to the Stanley Cup.
They removed the interim tag from him.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune to talk about the Blackhawks, their offseason, and the moves they've made, and ahead of free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.